sit down with Premier Jason Kenney today, and obviously Alberta and the city and the Oilers are all full of court press to have Edmonton as a host city. So I have a question for you. Are you certain the Oilers will be playing in Edmonton if they're a host city?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's kind of out there, isn't it? The idea that it's too much of a competitive advantage for Edmonton to be able to play in their own building. You know, I assume they'd have their own dressing room. And yeah, and that's out there, competitive advantage. I think probably some other organizations maybe put that forward. And I can understand where that point comes from. You know, at the same time, it's, you know, this is a big ask. Like, the amount of work that, whether it's Vegas, whether it's Vancouver, whether it's Edmonton, the amount of work that these teams have had to do to try and facilitate this, and they have had to spearhead the process. I mean, the NHL's been overseeing things, but they have put in hundreds of man hours into figuring out how to make this happen and working with the provincial government and the federal government and all that. And that would be quite the kick in the pants if all of a sudden it was, oh, yeah, by the way, your team has to go play in St. Louis or somewhere else. So I don't know which way it's going to go. I've heard that same thing out there. That is a lot to ask a team to do to prepare all of this stuff and then tell them their team can't play at home.
When you sat down with Kenny, were there anything that he maybe surprised you with? Any comments he made regarding the positive or negative approach or launch of perhaps this?
Yeah, I mean, he indicated that players, once they finished off their 14-day quarantine period, would kind of be able to just go about life like every other Albertan, you know, whether that's, you know, golfing or, you know, whatever's happening. As far as Alberta was concerned, the province was concerned. Now, I don't think that's the way that this is going to work. I think the players are going to be inside the NHL bubble, and they're not going to veer too far out of it. But it did shed a little bit of light on where the province is at in terms of how they feel about these guys coming and being and being here, that they're, you know, I asked him about risk and if he senses, you know, what the level of risk potentially is. And, yeah, they just, I mean, he's adamant that, look, you're never going to have zero risk, and you got to get after it. And they think that the risk level would be acceptable, and they're pushing really hard. Like, you guys have probably noticed, it's been a full court press between the mayor, the province, the Oilers have started talking a little bit now, trying to, and I think there's a reason for it, you guys. I think there was a sense that Canada was falling out of contention, that the border issues and the red tape were kind of making the NHL lean, yeah, we may have to just look at the states. And I think that's why we've seen the full court press here, to make it clear that Canada is and should still be an option.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joined us. Do you get a sense on what a timeline is for this? Like, could we see players, you know, back in their cities as early as June?
I think that might be kind of what they're shooting for, is trying to get players back sometime in June, middle of the month kind of thing. I don't really, like, I don't have this on any authority, but it seems to me like there's been a pretty fundamental shift, and I don't know where that happened. We were talking, and the most likely scenario to me felt like August, September. But then suddenly we were talking a lot more about July and August. And I'm not sure where that push came from, but it feels to me like the speed up button got pushed a little bit. Maybe it's the speed at which things are opening up in certain areas. I'm not sure where that came from. But it wouldn't surprise me if they're eyeballing kind of July, August, early September to get this thing completed. I don't know. It seems to me like the longer you wait, the better chance there is you're going to be able to do what you want. But at the same time, there's a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of things to consider, you know, like television networks and the different sports you're going up against and different, all kinds of different stuff. If you start too late next year and you got to push too far into the summer, well, you know, now you're up against the Olympics. So there's a lot of things to consider.
When you look at the issue of you know, the quarantine and people getting across the border between the U.S. and Canada, you know, some other countries maybe not having their border open, other than those things, you know, what would another market offer more than what Edmonton's able to offer here?
Yeah, good question. I mean, you know, it depends what your priority is, Strutty. Like, You know, and listen, it's not my job to make the pitch for them. I think they've been pretty adamant about why they think Edmonton makes sense, and you know, I'm just sort of covering the things they're saying. But they do make a certain amount of sense, right? I mean, if you look at, I mean, I think, I don't know what the update was today, but I think we had fewer than 60 active cases in Edmonton, you know, in a city this size. You know, compared to what's going on in other markets and other places, those are pretty good numbers, right? The number of people, like, you know, the premier today spelled out what the scenario was testing-wise. I mean, they have more tests than, you know, they're going to expand who they're going to be testing, but they have lots of testing capacity. So from that standpoint and the safety standpoint, I think they have a pretty good argument to make. And I, you know, about knowing the exact logistics of everywhere else, you know, you're probably not needing to mix in a lot of bus rides all over the place and loading players on and off of buses. And, you know, there's, you can kind of come up with basic walking routes everywhere that they might need to be. So the idea that they would create this bubble and ice district, it does feel like it's tailor-made for it in some ways. So that covers off the safety and the facilities. And then it was really interesting today, the push for the player experience and what that would look like. As Dregs reported today, I mean, this is going to be a big part of it, right? Players are going to be consulted on this. And if you're an NHL player, Strutty, you're going to say, what's my life going to look like? On a couple of fronts, what is there going to be for me to do? I mean, obviously you're focused on hockey and your team, but it can't just be arena, hotel room, cafeteria, you know, for 2.5+ months. For a team that goes to the final. So what's my experience look like? And if the answer is, well, look, you actually might have a golf course isolated for you to go play at. You know, there may be as many as 12, 13 different options of places to go eat within Ice District that are available within that bubble. We started to hear more details today about the player experience because I think the players are going to have a say in this. So it makes sense that, you know, the owners want to make public, hey, you know, a lot of people think about Edmonton in the middle of winter. Edmonton in July and August is a very different beast than it is in the wintertime, and here's what it has to offer, and you can tell the owners are wanting to put that out there.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, any idea on a guy like yourself who would cover the games? Would you have to be in quarantine for the entire time?
Am I in the bubble? Are you in the bubble, Gregs? Who's in the bubble? I don't know who's in the bubble. My wife's been asking me, are you going to be in the bubble? Because I think we all know what that means. I think those plans are still in the works, right? So think about the options. You either say to the outlets, okay, you can each isolate a reporter and a cameraman, or you allow a certain number of media outlets to put someone inside the bubble, and they're staying in a hotel somewhere with whoever, with the NHL people or whatever it looks like, and you're coming and going from the rink. I still don't think we're going to be in a time and place where I walk into the locker room and in a basic scrum setting walk up and stick my mic in Connor McDavid's face.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. So if what it is I walk into the Oilers Hall of Fame room and sit down in a chair and Connor McDavid's 25 feet away from me at a table, if that's my access to the player anyway, do I need to be in a bubble for 3 months to do that? You know, if they can find a safe way to get the media in the building, up the elevator, and to one of the levels, you know, whether it's the press box level or the loge level or whatever they want to do, and then get them down to the press conference room, and there's a big sheet of glass in front of where the players are going to come sit down, you know, there's probably a way to have the media cover the event but not have to be part of the actual quarantine bubble. I mean, they're still trying to figure out what's happening with the players and their families. I feel like we're pretty far down the list, fellas.
Yeah, no, I was just kind of curious because it's, you know, it stems to on ice, off ice officials, you know, so many other people, and on, you know, listening to Kenny suggest if the players were able to kind of just freely move around after the 2 week quarantine, then if that's what they're thinking, that's what the medical people are saying, then, you know, as a media person, now I agree with you, it's likely not going to be face to face scrums as in the past, right? There might be a limit on, you know, one person, per outlet per se. Kind of thing per team. I could see, you know, a restriction on something like that, maybe. But if they're saying the players might be free to move around, well, then you don't need.
Yeah,
I
hear exactly what you're saying. I don't think that's the way it's going to work in the NHL's vision of this bubble. I think the NHL, the players are not going to be out in and among the general public. They're going to keep them more separated because the one thing that they're not doing that's different than the public is asked to do is to socially distance in the exact same way, right? So we know players in a locker room and on the ice are not social distancing the way that you and I would have to if we were out doing something together. And so I just think the rules are a little bit different for these 500 or so people that are going to be in this bubble, and I think they're going to want to lock it off as much as they can. So as much as the Premier suggested that today, I think the NHL's vision of that is a little bit different. But I don't know where the bubble starts. I don't know where it ends. I don't know if I'm in it or not. I don't know if you guys are or not. There's a lot of this to be determined and lots of conversations still to be had. And, you know, even the question of what happens if a player tests positive, even that, I think, needs to be worked on. And I did throw that at the Premier today. And I think they feel like if they can throw enough testing at it, that they can, you know, find a way to make it safe. But I'm telling you, you know, you have a player test positive at 8 a.m. and their team's supposed to play at 4 that afternoon.
Yeah.
How you get that team safely on the ice and the opponent safely on the ice, I'm not sure. But they feel they can do it. So whatever that protocol is, they seem confident that they can do it.
Sean, before we let you go, would it be inconvenient for you and Parker to share a room and still have your elliptical machine in that room? Because I know you like to work out and use it so much.
Yeah, no, there'll be no sharing rooms with anybody, man. That is not happening. No, he's a runner, too. He's more of a – he'd be the treadmill guy.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks for the update. We'll see what puts
now, Sean, before I let you go, how are you doing today with the news coming out that Aunt Becky is going to jail for 2 months?
Oh, boy.
I saw that. So she's getting 2 months, eh? How much did Martha Stewart do?
That's a good question. I have no
Martha
idea.
Stewart went in and did some pretty cold, hard time, too, at one point. So, hey, if Martha Stewart can hack it in prison, I think Aunt Becky will be just fine.
Yeah, well, she pled guilty to the admission scandal. They're charged with paying $500,000 in bribes for their daughters to be recruited to USC.
Jeez.
So 2 months in prison, $150,000 fine, and 2 years of supervised release with 100 hours of community service.
Holy smokes, not to mention the $500,000 they spent that went to waste.
Yeah
well, boo-hoo. Crime doesn't pay, Shogger. Crime doesn't pay.
Talk to you guys soon.